Well, it is Wednesday, July 11th, 2012. So that's 7-11-12. You can play those box trade or what have you. And the person we're going to be talking about for the next, you know, hour, hour and a half, 2 hours or so is somebody. He tried to figure out how to take 7 and 11 and 12 and go to certain places in the community and try to make an investment and maybe come out with, you know, a dollar or two extra. 72 years. He came from Tennessee, moved to Indianapolis, educated at School 41 at Addicts High School, was a wrestler, a football player, had a big A, which means you have a letter. So he was a letter carrier in school, attended Alabama State University, attended the University of Indianapolis when it had its old name, Indiana Central College, worked at more places than folks will work at a lifetime, was a golf caddy at the Broadmoor Country Club, was at the, I didn't even know Kroger had a dairy, at the Kroger Dairy, Allison, Cummins, Coca-Cola, Indianapolis Power and Light, Center Township Trustee, Indianapolis Housing Authority. For 3.5 decades, the people of Indianapolis in his neighborhood elected him first to the city county council for 4 terms and then to the Indiana State Senate. We're talking about Glenn Howard, and I think the best line that has been given so far, and you're going to hear some people that may have some better lines, came from, of all people, Governor Mitch Daniels. In what he said about Glenn Howard, he was a lion in a debate, but a joy as a friend. And that transcended politics, that transcended race. And he's a voice that our community has missed. In the House, we're going to be remembering Glenn Howard, his contributions, what he did for this community, and that he epitomized a generation of African-American men and women who were forged in the crucible of civil rights, who got out on point in their, dare I say it, 30s. And it raises the question, where are the Glenn Howards in 2012? In the studio with me, State Representative Bill Crawford, who knew Glenn Howard. We'll find out for real now, you know, how long. George Van Sickle, a very, very good friend of him and the Howard family. Ron Anderson, who ran a literacy program. We'll find out how Glenn Howard inspired his life. We have a young man in the House that has a deep legacy that he has to live up to, and that's Glenn Howard's son, Glenn. He's here in the studio. And on our live line, a powerful, strong voice that our community has not heard on the airwaves, Bill Crawford, in decades. He's now a distinguished attorney in the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia. But many in the community remember Berto Elmore, or also, a.k.a. and Yofu Elmore. And the heck he did out in the community, whether it was boycotts at Shortridge and standing up for the downtrodden. And Brother Elmore is on our live line. Gentlemen, welcome. Glad to have all of you here. Let me first start with Glenn Howard Jr., Glenn Howard II. Let me first say, on behalf of all of us here at the radio station, all of us in the community, you know, our prayers are with you. We feel your loss. First of all, how's your mom? How's Glenn's better half, Florence, for all these many years? How's she doing?
Oh, she's holding up real, real good. She's okay.
Everybody's fine? How you doing?
I mean, I'm taking it day by day. That's the only thing I can do.
When you've heard all these tributes to your dad from the words of the governor on down, how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel real happy because he got a lot of friends here in the city.
Mm-hmm. Does it give you something? Because you got his name, and that's a tough legacy to live up to.
Yes, sir. Yes, it is.
All right. Bill Crawford, you knew him for many, many years. And even though we knew this day, unfortunately, would come, it's still a loss.
It is, Amos. And again, I want to give my gratitude to Glenn Jr. and Tamara and Florence, his wife, who stood by through some troubling times. and they demonstrated the essence of family. Hmm. I met Glenn in the 50s when he first came to Indianapolis. We grew up in the same neighborhood. As a matter of fact, there was a basketball goal on my garage, my family's garage. Right. And we used to play ball together. We lived directly across the street from School 41, and we would play softball in their playground area. I was 4 years older than Glenn. And when I left to go to the service and came back, I was back in Indianapolis maybe a year, 2 years, and happened to go to Cincinnati Jazz Festival mm-hmm. when it was a real jazz festival, and ran into Glenn at a hotel. And we developed an ongoing relationship from that point on because of our love for jazz, for real jazz. And I began to associate with Glenn. And I knew the story of Glenn when he went to Alabama State. And I think people don't realize when he was a student at Alabama State, he marched with Dr. King mm. at a time when marching with Dr. King puts you in harm's way. Mm. We had marches and demonstrations in Indianapolis, but we didn't have the dogs or the water holes.
So he was down there as part of that front line of young adults.
Absolutely, as a student. And I think that's when he was forged in the essence of the movement. But he came back, and after we associated, we formed the African-American Cultural Society, the Jazz Workers. We gravitated to the Black Radical Action Project, the Indianapolis Black Coalition, the Indiana Christian Leadership Conference, and then subsequent to that, within a decade of those things, we got involved in politics.
Let me bring Yofu Elmore into the conversation. He's a voice that many in the community remember but have not heard for a long time. Brother Yofu, first of all, welcome. When did you first meet Glenn Howard?
I met Glenn when I was in high school. But first, I'd like to say I am extremely, extremely happy that you give me this opportunity to honor my friend Glenn Howard. I'm here in Philly, and a lot of the things that I do, I pick them up from Glenn, and it's just like, I don't know, I've been really off and on really emotional about this thing, because when you're a young man and you're growing up, there are people that you look up to mm-hmm. and you want to follow. And Glenn Howard was definitely one of those people in my life. I mean, obviously, there was the deal. You were there. Reverend Brown, Reverend Hicks, a lot of people. But I was really close with Glenn. We used to go over his house. He'd call us, me and some of the other people, and go over and do things, and I was just sitting here, and I just had to tell a judge, which was trying to make me have a case, do a case today.
Yeah.
I said, Judge, I'm going to honor my friend on this radio program. And she said, well, you can do this case. I looked at it again. I said, Judge, I'm going to Uh-oh. Honor my friend.
Well.
And she looked at me, and I looked at her. She said, "Well, yeah, we're gonna continue these cases." Because I was, people, and I haven't been in leadership been somewhat a leader in Indianapolis. I don't think people really. We got to really put out there the foundation that Glenn laid. You know, I followed Glenn and a lot of other people. But when it came to the and now as I'm older, I'm not as old as Glenn, obviously, because he was my big my big brother saw what. It's like I'm doing I understand as he got older, he had this tremendous love-hate relationship with black people. And it's the same thing with me today, and I see myself then. I was thinking about it. I'm like Glenn Howard, you know what I mean? You have this tremendous, and he always had this tremendous love for black people. But sometimes our people get him so frustrated. Sometimes people didn't understand that. Glenn wanted us to do the right thing.
Right.
Very, very much so, and he gets so hot with us. I remember sometimes that people wouldn't understand when he said, "Ain't gonna do nothing." Sit down on my ass. Ain't gonna do nothing. That's what he ain't gonna do. That was because he wanted us to do so much.
George Van Sickle, when Yofu Elmore mentioned the Glenn Howard's love hate relationship, you really got tickled because he really. When he spoke out, not only did he speak out against injustice and speak out against oppression, but he would also call the community out.
Glenn did have a love-hate relationship with the African-American community. When I met Glenn, it was back in the late 60s. I was 17, 18 years old. He politely referred to me as a junie flip, and he let me tag around and everything, him and Bill Crawford and Dr. Andrew J. Brown. But I was a member of the St. John's Missionary Baptist Church, and my parents had took me to see Dr. King back in the 1958 when he came to St. John's. So I was already familiar with the movement. But Glenn had a unique style, and his favorite saying was, "Put the pot on." I put the pot on. We put the pot on. And he truly did. Glenn wrote his own eulogy by just living his life and walking in the steps and the path of righteousness. And he really did that. A lot of people didn't understand him. A lot of people couldn't understand him. He was excluded from a lot of places. He certainly didn't pass the brown paper bag test or anything like that. But if you ever listened to Glenn and the merits and the essence of what he was saying, they were true. And he would always go out. And it's everybody benefit from Glenn. When Glenn opened his mouth, whether it's for a labor union or to feed the hungry or clothe the naked or to visit the prisoners or whatever, everybody benefit. He didn't benefit just his friends. Everybody benefit from that. When he had the venue on the Nightline radio show, the weekly radio show. He used to complain and drive out there at 11:30 at night over at South Villa where WTLC's headquarters
was. Oh, this
is
way, way back.
And his Spider-Man and T.J. Griffin and a bunch of the other older disc jockeys, Fred Robinson and all them, would let us in and give us the microphone. And Glenn would do that relentlessly. He had a 1972 Cutlass. And he would do that relentlessly and drive out there. Oh, man, I got to get this radio station. And ironically, the very disease that... took our brother down, that assisted with his expiration. Glenn had a photographic memory. Glenn could remember things. Bill and I would be walking on the side. Yeah, so-and-so, that's that guy that did this, and he works at such a place. Remember telephone numbers? And Glenn's Rolodex was 2 inches thick, and he carried it in his back pocket. Everywhere he went, he'd find a phone. Wasn't no cell phones. Wasn't no fax machines. Glenn was a communicating Facebook genius.
Let me, because George Van Sickle, you mentioned something that the bulk of the community, the bulk of the audience does not know because at the family's request, the friends of Glenn Howard kind of participated in a conspiracy of love. In that, Glenn was victimized by Alzheimer's. And as we all remember what happened to former President Ronald Reagan, that he was forced to retire from public life. And his wife, Nancy, the former first lady, enveloped, her man with love, just as Mrs. Howard Florence enveloped her man with love. So, in one sense, his voice was suddenly silent. All of a sudden, a voice that people regularly heard on television, heard on the radio, they would see on television, they'd see him. If somebody was starting something in Indianapolis, Glenn Howard would be there. That all of a sudden, he vanished. And people might have wondered, well, what was going on? Well, we kind of knew, but to protect his privacy at the request of the family and allow what the days that the Lord was going to give him to live those in dignity and privacy. So that's the reason why you really didn't hear him. And Bill Crawford, that was a loss to have such a vibrant, strong voice not on the battlefield these last few years.
Yes, Amos, but we had his legacy,
mm-hmm.
and we had his example. And for those of us that were close to him, we would gather at Glenn's house
mm-hmm.
even after he had retired.
Mm-hmm.
We would be there all day watching the bowl games.
Right.
We would be there for the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and Glenn would be participating and be a part of our discussion. And there were a cadre of us, mm-hmm. 10 or 12, that used to gather every, with the exception of this year. We did not do that, so but Glenn's legacy was there,
mm-hmm.
and he had touched so many lives
right.
in so many different ways that it was not a day that went by when his voice became silent on the radio that someone would not ask me, how's Glenn doing?
Ron Anderson, education in kids was very, very important to Glenn Howard. You're part of an organization. When you gave me the name, you know, I thought I was not hearing correctly, called Clown Literacy, that deals with literacy with our kids.
Absolutely. Glenn Howard was my mentor
mm-hmm.
and really first teacher as far as men,
mm.
Because you could trust that once he got behind closed doors, he wouldn't waver.
Mm.
That's right.
You see, so Glenn and I, we worked, I actually met Glenn through Paul Jones and Dr. Burt Savas. So back in the days when Burt was the president of the City County Council, I would go down there and just listen, hang around and, you know, walk through the City County building and do different things mm-hmm. and hang out. Well, after working with the UNWA Center
right.
Over at 29th and Clifton, we decided to come up with this literacy concept, and Glenn Howard was very instrumental with this program. And the mission of it is to assist children in becoming scientists and doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had press conferences. We gave out tons of dictionaries in the community all over central Indiana. And so as of today, his son and I, we came up with an annual barbecue for Glenn, and it's called We Love Glenn Howard, America's Servant for the Human Family.
Hmm.
And he was a humble servant. Right. And, you know, when I'm being privileged to sit in this room full of history with all of you great leaders of the community. So we need to really do all that we can
mm-hmm.
to push the We Love Glenn Howard
okay.
annual barbecue.
When's it going to be?
Well, we'll have it around this time every year.
Okay.
Every July.
Okay.
And you know, we need your support, Amos, to help us, you know, push this.
It'll be July 2013.
Exactly. And we're going to his golf program will benefit right. from it.
In Yofu Elmore,
yeah.
Glenn Howard, one could say, was fearless. And fearless not only in front of his own people, but fearless in speaking truth to power.
Well, yes, he was, and there's something. Glenn was also he knew how to work things, and I recall when I was going down to the city council protesting for jobs and stuff. Glenn was like helping me. Direct things, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Telling me, like, this is what you need to do.
Right.
Working behind the scenes with me, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And the thing that, and not only with that, but Glenn knew certain things, because certain things I would do was, you know, was a little bit on the edge for Indianapolis back then.
Right.
And,
a little bit.
But Glenn and I would talk on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask him, well, what do you think about this? And I remember I took these bumper stickers. I had some bumper stickers I knew the city was going to be upset about. And I took them over and I said, Glenn, this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Glenn said, I know nothing, but go ahead and give it to him.
What was on the bumper sticker?
Oh, it was a bumper sticker with Mayor Hudnut making the – it was two of them. I think one was Mayor Hudnut is making the city lily white.
I remember that one.
Lily Endowment was – making the city lily white.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that that was going to cause the power structure to be upset.
Right.
But, you know, when you talk about Glenn, Glenn was not liked by a lot of times he was not liked, and sometimes I think more misunderstood, by the black elite in Indianapolis. But that's what made him Glenn Howard. He didn't care about being accepted in the elite, the black elite. What Glenn was concerned about, what I always loved about him, he was concerned about helping people and speaking out about everyday lives of black people in that city. And it didn't make, and that's why when I'm sure when we get together and they say, Glenn Howard knew everybody in Indianapolis because he never got new. He was just he'd be in the store. He'd conversate with everybody. Never, you know, that was Glenn. Argue with everybody, invite everybody down, tell them you better come on down, you know. And that's what I really impressed. My operation is in the heart of North Philly, which is the ghetto of what you would say in Philadelphia.
Right.
And I got that from Glenn. You got to stay right where you're at. And he never moved into a big house that I know. Didn't he still reside on 36th Street?
Yep.
See, that's Glenn Howard. I remember he used to live in upstairs in that apartment on, was it 30th or 30th Eugene?
Street, yeah.
I know, yeah. Bill, you know, it was on 30th Street, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, and Glenn would always, he didn't want, see, and I tell people, it's not all about the material things. Glenn could have had a lot of material things.
Amen.
But Glenn wanted to be where our people were at and to be able to challenge them. And I remember he used to be a basketball coach. He used to referee.
I can tell Inyofu Elmore is a great attorney in Philadelphia because you don't let the prosecution get a word in.
I try not to.
All right, there you go. Okay,
wait,
hold on a second because I got to take a break. Hold on, don't go nowhere.
All right.
Since you done made a deal with the judge, you got some juice in Philadelphia. You made a deal with the Philadelphia See, it's Philadelphia lawyer. When we come back, we'll take a break. We'll continue conversation. George Van Sickle, Glenn Howard Jr., Inyofu Elmore, Ron Anderson, Bill Crawford. When we come back from the break, we'll be joined by City County Councilor William Duke Oliver and Jim Morris, former head of the Lilly Endowment, former head of the UN Food for Peace Program, now the head of Pacers Sports and Entertainment. And you talk about two different folks who got along. That was Jim Morris and Glenn Howard. All that and more. We're remembering a life well lived, as well as what lessons can we learn in 2012 that Glenn Howard teaches that our community needs to know today. It's Afternoons with Amos, special edition after these. Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. City County Councilor Duke Oliver is here in the studio with us. On our live line is Jim Morris, former head of the Lilly Endowment, former head of the UN Food for Peace Program, currently the president of Pacers Sports and Entertainment, and somebody that hung with Glenn Howard and Glenn Howard hung with them. Jim, first of all, welcome. When did you first meet Glenn Howard?
Well, I'm not sure, Amos, but he was my friend for more than 30 years. And my really good friend, I knew him very well. I loved him dearly. We did a lot of things together that good friends do. And there are a few people over the last 30, 40 years in Indianapolis that I have admired more than Glenn Howard.
What was it about him that was special?
Well, he was absolutely honest. He had a caring heart that maybe unlike anybody I've ever known. He cared deeply for young people, for kids, And anybody who needed a boost, who was vulnerable, who was somehow at risk, Glenn Howard was always there. As a honest, straightforward friend, and never doing something for somebody else because it might make him look good. He was a helpful, good guy who wanted to make life better for anybody that he came in contact with. Mm-hmm. He was as popular as anybody I've known in Indianapolis. People on both sides of the political spectrum loved being with the guy. He had a great, great smile. And if you walk two blocks with him downtown, it might take 2 hours because dozens of people would stop and want to talk with him.
Glenn was part of a generation. You were part of a generation that, despite differences on different issues, could at least come together and talk them out privately, where a lot of things could be done behind closed doors without either side giving up their manhood or their womanhood and discuss things frankly. And it's almost like, I'm going to bring Brooke Crawford into this conversation, that's something we don't seem to have here in Indianapolis anymore.
Well, all I know is that Bill Crawford and Glenn Howard were incredible gifts to this city. They're both impeccably honest, both always cared about doing the right thing, about doing anything, anytime, anywhere that could make life better for those who were vulnerable, but really in moving the city forward. And Glenn Howard didn't have a selfish bone in his body, and plus he was just fun to be with. You know, that infectious smile. I loved, he and I would have lunch, you know, at least once a month for years. And it was just, I always look forward to that. He lifted you up. He made you better.
And I think I did not realize until I looked at the biographical information that has been put together, that he was involved in so much, but in a way that he was involved but not involved. And when I say not involved, it wasn't about, hey, I'm involved in this. He was just there doing it.
Yep. I never saw him, honest to God, I never saw him put himself forward. I never saw him try to make a big shot out of himself. He was involved, you know, especially for kids. He was so loyal to Crispus Attucks High School. Mm. He loved playing golf. He was a hell of a competitor, a very competitive guy. And whether you were talking about running a race or playing golf or playing football, he was very competitive.
Now, I heard in golf that, you know, he could hang, or Tiger Woods would have trouble hanging with Glenn Howard.
That's probably an overstatement, but Glenn Howard, he and I, if we were playing golf together and he would hit a drive, or if I would hit a good drive, he would go to his heels to hit it 10 yards further than I did. But always, you know, just fun, good fun to be with. And this was a great man.
I'm going to, Jim Morris, ask you a question because I know we're on a time schedule with you, and I may ask our other guests as we go along in this program, what do you think Glenn Howard's legacy to this city is, A, and what is he, and what kind of fitting living tribute could a city like Indianapolis do for a Glenn Howard?
Well, we will never have anyone who cared more about kids, who brought the rest of the community together to find a way to make opportunities available for young people. But this is a man that did things right, and he wanted young people to grow up and do things right. So the standard of a civic leader who gave it his all, who worked 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And you could just trust this guy. He was never making the case for something because it would benefit him. He lived his life for others, especially kids in his neighborhood. And I think that we need to find a way to sort of define what this man represents and use that as a way of honoring and encouraging other adults to make it, you know, there's nothing more important in the life of a community than being sure that every single young person has a chance. Mm. And that's what he stood for. I'm not sure how we ought to honor that, but we need to.
And I know Jim Morris, Glenn's son, is here listening, you know, to those words. And I know, you know, he's very appreciative of it, and it does define what his dad was about.
And as my wife would say, it has the added advantage of being the truth.
Jim Morris, thank you very, very much for sharing your remembrances of a very unique citizen in our city. Glenn Howard, thanks very much for being with us.
I miss him a lot. Thank you.
All right. I think we all miss him a lot. In Yofu Elmore, what do you think his legacy in terms of Glenn Howard was, and what is a fitting living memorial to him?
Glenn was a constant activist. You just can't remember everything that he's been involved in. And I was reading... George, you had put together a real nice thing for Glenn, and I didn't see you. You forgot about MOE. I know it's a whole lot to put a 67.
No, MOE's in there.
Is it in there?
For those that don't know what MOE is and think it might be one of the Three Stooges, what was MOE?
Movement for Opportunity.
What did it do?
Movement for Opportunity and Equality, and it was a union organizing advocacy organization. Glenn was a employed at Allison Division of General Motors, and that's when they were treating the African Americans. They didn't advance them to supervisory managerial positions and that type
skilled
of thing.
Skilled trades.
A group of young men got together at the basement of St. John's Missionary Baptist Church during Operation Breadbasket. They would have the meetings before Breadbasket started, and they strategized on how to make things better. They took on the unions. They took on the management. They filed a lawsuit with the Department of Justice. They had to wait years before it even came to fruition, but they finally won it. And everyone that has a home, a boat, a car, a summer house, or whatever that's employed by those plants got it through the efforts of Movement for Opportunity and Equality. Mm-hmm. Nelly McGuire is one of the existing founders of that organization along with Glenn Howard.
And you know what, George, and that's the thing about Glenn. Glenn could have gotten himself a very good position at Allison. But he didn't want that. He wanted everybody else to benefit from it.
Mm.
And all those people, and that's what makes Glenn so special.
Yeah, and Glenn,
he didn't like Jim said, he never was trying to be a big shot. Now, you got a lot of those people out of, that work for General Motors in the state of Indiana.
Right.
They owe a lot. That's Glenn's legacy.
Right.
They owe a lot. You know, black people being promoted into management positions now. You've got vice presidents of the plant. And a lot of that, people don't realize that, but came from Glenn Howard.
Glenn's legacy is going to reside in the hearts and minds of every individual within the state of Indiana, because Glenn touched so many people with so many identifying programs and unique situations. Glenn affected a lot of kids through the Glenn Howard Jr. Golf Program. He acknowledged the contributions of white Americans to the African-American community through the King, Walker, Wilkins, and Young. He had the bragging rights, and he tied in the school system and all the older graduates and players through the bragging rights. He helped the Alpha Home. He helped the labor unions. He helped the skilled trades and everything. And then not to mention his political career, where he touched the hearts and minds of his constituencies.
Glenn's district was always on the west side, whether it was the city county council or the state senate. But you would have thought Glenn was the mayor of the city because he could go to the far east side, the south side, and everybody would know him and call him first for the problem. Glenn had to develop a field office to route the problems.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon. His name is, let me go to Reverend Moja Jabu. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine.
Bill and Glenn Jr. and everybody else is up in there. How y'all be?
I'm doing good.
I just wanted to share some words. I'm down here. Excuse that butch in the background. But I just wanted to share some words about Glenn. And one thing I appreciate about Glenn is you didn't have to guess about where he was. Glenn's yay was yay and his nay was nay. And he was bold, audacious, whether you agree with him or not. Glenn was going to be where Glenn was, and he didn't have any problem standing with 2 feet and bold words and if necessary, loud words to say where he stood. And so even in disagreement and agreement, you didn't have any problem understanding where Glenn stood. And I know he's up in there telling God right now how to rearrange things in heaven. So I just want to appreciate him and his legacy. And, Junior, you got some big shoes to fill. You know, be yourself.
Thank you.
Don't forget your day.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you. City County Councilor William Duke Oliver. You know. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Anilfu, and then I'm going to bring Councilman Oliver in the conversation.
Okay. You're talking about something you could do.
Yeah.
I think perhaps a Glenn Howard leadership activist type of, I don't want to say workshop, but a training that to continue the work. First, you need to evaluate really how much of an impact he had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've impacted a lot of people in my life, and a lot of that is because of Glenn Howard and what he taught me how to do. So what I'm saying, perhaps the creation of a leadership training thing, Glenn Howard leadership training, a program where you take Glenn's work, body of work, and we analyze it, and this is what he was about, and then teach other young people how to deal with, how to handle that. Get a lot of archives from his speeches. The city council has all those tapes and things, and that could help develop leadership that what Glenn Howard was about. And because you got a lot of information, he's got a body of work.
Right.
We just have to put it together, and then you can actually teach people how to, like he was, he like to have, when you say Indianapolis, the black community, Glenn Howard was like, knew everybody, like he just was one of us. He was a person that, you know, a black person that just could move through the neighborhood. It's incredible how you can have such leadership and have it so grassroots. You know what I mean? I hope y'all understand what I'm saying.
I think we do, Councilman Duke Oliver. You know, your reaction to, first of all, what Brother Anilfu Elmore said, and then what, in your mind, is Glenn Howard's legacy?
Well, first, let me start off by saying thank you for inviting me down, Amos. I knew Glenn several years before I started working when I was an adult, I knew of him. I didn't know him. I knew his younger brother, Bobby, but I didn't really know Glenn, O.D. They were older, and I come to know them later on. Well, anyway, when I hired into the plant in 1965, it was a predominantly white plant, 90% white, the Shaylin Chrysler Electrical plant. And 1967, if you remember, the turbulent times of the publisher, George Wallace and others. And Glenn made contact with me as a representative form of this organization called MO, Movement for Opportunity and Equality, which Mr. Van Sickle just mentioned. And so he recruited us from all the plants, from Link Belt, Chrysler, Ford, Chevrolet, Diamond Chain, so forth. All over the city we had representatives from the plant because we were not being represented as forcefully as the white counterparts in the plant. We were glad to get hired in those days and the first to get fired, perhaps, and the union was not doing everything spiritually, forcefully to represent us. Numerous cases like that.
Right.
including promotion, skilled trades, and all that. Well, anyway, we would meet down at St. John. On my right here, Representative Crawford, we would come. We had to pass through the side door, passing through Reverend Brown's office there in the back, and Representative Crawford is sitting the same way, almost sitting in the same seat. We always see him reading a book on Saturday morning when we passed the Reverend Brown's office.
That's
back
right.
In the study, sitting there reading a book. You know, I mean, we go and have our meeting. Well, anyway, let me tell you, Amy, that there were three persons that were being ridiculed in our plant that others said don't listen to them.
Right.
One was Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. The other was Bob DeFrance, and the third was Glenn Howard. you know what I mean? And all three speak for themselves. They have the legacy. Those two have the legacy, and we're speaking about Glenn now. So I mentioned it again. There were three persons that the majority in that plant said, these are bad people. We don't need them to come to Indianapolis. We don't need Martin Luther King to come here starting trouble. And Bob DeFrance and his theories on school and education of black kids, oh, no, don't listen to him. And for heaven's sake, I know you're not a friend of Glenn Howard. You know what I mean? So we know that's exactly who you're supposed to listen to. So thank you again.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me bring in City County Councilor Monroe Gray, we know Monroe Gray is a great golfer. Not as great, though, as Glenn Howard. So let me first ask you, Monroe Gray, as a golfer, we heard Jim Morris earlier say that Glenn was fiercely competitive. When you played with Glenn, did you let him win?
No.
Was he a fierce competitor on the golf course?
He's a fierce competitor, and he also talked a lot of stuff on the golf course. But you couldn't let him beat you, because if you let him beat you, you would never hear it, and it would be all over town before you got home that he beat you.
What do you think, Councilman, his legacy is?
You know, Amos, first of all, Glenn was my friend before he was anything else. And then, you know, I sat behind him for 17 years on the City County Council waiting for him to make a move so that I would have some room to grow. My greatest thing with Glenn is the fact that, you know, I worked in a barbershop for 20-something years.
Right.
And people used to come in there, and some of our very own, and would ridicule Glenn. And the first thing that people would say is, don't say nothing about Glenn, because Monroe's going to defend him to the end. But Glenn was a unique person in the fact that he would take up any fight for the community. And he wasn't afraid to stand out there and come out and say what he needed to say or do what he needed to do. Glenn, and, you know, if Glenn was in this for himself, he would have been a very wealthy man.
Yeah.
But he wasn't about his growth. He was about the growth of the community. He was about the betterment of other people and to make sure that they had a good life and that they would serve a great justice for all. He was just a committed person to doing the right thing and making sure that the right thing got done.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me take a break, a hold, and we'll hold on to City County Council Monroe Gray, Attorney Aniofu Elmore, the guests that are here, Glenn Howard Jr., George Van Sickle, Ron Anderson, State Representative Bill Crawford. Because when I come back, I want to ask, you know, a hidden question in all of this. Glenn Howard, all of you started when you were young men in your 20s, teens, 30s. And nobody just simply grabbed you and may have mentored you, but you guys took these balls and ran with it. Why don't we see that today from young men and women in their 20s and 30s going out here, not waiting for older folks to tell them what to do, but grabbing the ball on their hands and moving out? You know, is that one of the challenges our community faces? 239-1310, we're remembering the legacy of Glenn Howard. His calling is Friday at Stewart's at 22nd and Illinois from 4 until 8. His home going is at 11 o'clock sharp at Crispus Attucks High School. 1140 Dr. Martin Luther King Street, the street he named that ought to go up to 96th Street. Anyway, it's After News with Amos, after these. All right, welcome back. 239-1310, 239-1310, it's After News with Amos. Talking about the legacy of Glenn Howard, and Yofu Elmore, Philadelphia attorney. I know in Philadelphia there are young African-American men and women in their 20s and 30s that are going out and doing great things in that community, but we don't see that happening here. Is it in Philadelphia? Is it organic where it occurs, or is the same problem we're seeing here happening in a place like Philly?
I think it's the same problem. What we have, and I represent a lot of young people, mm-hmm. particularly young black males between the age of, I would say, 14 to 30.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I think it was, I lost 10 to a homicide client. Talking about people I sit down with, know, go to court with, 10 of them. We have a real problem, and that's why I like to go back. And young people, like, I just laughed when I was smiling. I had a big smile on my face. That's true about Bill. When we was at Breadbasket, Bill, and see, little things like that are important because we used to talk of you were reading, always reading a book. Of course, Glenn was always talking, but I remember that when I was a kid, you were always reading a book. But I think that's what we need is, like I say, take leadership that Glenn had.
Right.
It's a unique leadership. Even though people would say, you know, well, Glenn Howard, and they would say some things about Glenn, but they would always end up voting for Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
He was you couldn't beat him in an election. I remember we first celebrated and when he first won his first election. Bill, you remember you bawled me out for going out and tearing down all of the opponent's stickers?
Yeah.
I mean, bumper. You remember that, William?
Yes, I do.
And you said, you can't do that.
1975.
That was in 70, what?
75.
75. And, but that's what I'm saying his uniqueness was, is that he could. We need to look, and I'm going to look at it no matter what. Young black men in particular need that type of leadership. Of course, there was a whole different thing when we were coming up. See, Glenn, Bill, Reverend Brown, and those type of guys was my hero. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Those are people that I wanted to be like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Warren Jabali, who was also a good friend of Glenn's. And we get down to that church, we don't have that anymore.
Mm.
And one of the things I try to emphasize here in Philly is that we got to motivate young people. It's essential now because in my town, we have so many young people in jail. We have the highest population ratio of young black men in the world incarcerated here in Philadelphia. It's just we got so many people in jail. But I think if we could create the body of work for Glenn,
mm-hmm.
figure out what he would do, what he did to be so popular, and that type of leadership is really needed. And I've been sitting there pondering, like, how did Glenn do what he did? We really need to understand that. You got a guy didn't have a lot of education. You know, he went to high school, he went to college, but he didn't have all the PhD degrees and all of that. But he could just take over a room and everybody would know who he was and he would lead. And I don't know how to take that and
replicate it, and duplicate.
Yeah, and duplicate. I just don't. But we can work on it. We certainly can find out. And I think that would be a good start, particularly in Indianapolis, where he is such a legacy. I don't know. Now you all can help me. Do the young people know who Glenn Howard is? And I'm pretty sure they do, don't they?
I think some do, some do, some don't. But anyway, let me hold on a hot second. Let me bring 239-1310 Jack into the conversation. Hi, Jack.
Hi, you guys.
Hi.
I have a deep love for Glenn, and I know all you guys. I went to school with Tommy, and of course, I know the rest of you guys. I go back to Glenn Howard back in the 50s because I used to play basketball at Douglas Park. And you always knew when Glenn was coming into the park because he was talking to stuff. I've been in advertising, as you know, all my life. And on the national scene, we see the black image. But here in Indianapolis, Glenn used to fight for it all the time.
Yeah.
He said, we need more blacks in advertising to give us a better image. I used to talk that all the time, but Glenn was solid in this area. There was only one guy that could talk as much as Glenn. We called him Fat Mouth. But Fat Mouth just talked stuff, but Glenn talked the truth.
Mm.
Glenn was good. And when we were through playing basketball, we would go over Schofield and skate. You always knew when Glenn came in the skating ring because he was talking stuff. And Glenn was ahead of his time. We need a better image, and Glenn was fighting for it, and we don't have it now.
All right, Jack, we appreciate you. We appreciate that. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. Let me bring City County Councilor Monroe Gray back into the conversation. You said that so many years you sat behind Glenn Howard in the City County Council, he never had the privilege of serving in the council when Democrats were in the majority. And obviously the council is getting ready to, you know, August is going to be a hot month, not just in temperature here, but politically as we really talk about a 40, 50, $60 million budget deficit. Are Glenn Howard's words and passion going to be felt, you know, in what's getting ready to happen in this great debate in this city over priorities?
I think any time there's a debate in this city, someone has to always give reference to Senator Glenn Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say this, Amos. You hear so much about all the bad kids in the city of Indianapolis. But if you look at our legislature makeup, you'll see the benefit of the work of a Glenn Howard.
Mm.
Look at all the new young women that are now being elected into office at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the city county level. We have a young black lady that's now the president of the council.
Right.
Without people like Senator Glenn Howard, none of these things would have never been possible. We would have still been back there waiting for the day to come. I said, you know, so here in Indianapolis, if you would come to the concerned clergy, we have several young lawyers now that are being involved in the clergy. We got seven young ladies that are taking active roles, but they don't have the voice of a Glenn Howard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not boisterous. They're not. They don't articulate their message loud and clear like a Senator Howard did. But we're making progress in these lines, and we have some young people coming up through the ranks now that I think that's going to be great leaders, but maybe not as boisterous as a Glenn Howard.
Monroe Gray, City County Councilor, veteran City County Councilor. Thank you very, very much, Berto and Yofu Elmore. I know many in the community that remember you. I know it was great for them to hear your voice, and it kind of, you know, brought back memories and turned people's gray hair back to black. Thank you very, very much for doing what you're doing. And lawyer in Philadelphia.
Yes. I just got a question, Amy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get out. I know you got to go. Did they refer to Glenn, the Senator Glenn, or do most people still in that town just refer to him as Glenn?
Oh, I think it's Senator Glenn. What is it, Bill Crawford?
More so Senator.
Senator.
Oh,
17
okay.
years on the council Senate. And 17 years in the state Senate.
And and Yofu sitting here in the studio with me is the person that had the very difficult assignment of succeeding Glenn Howard's large shoes, and that's State Senator Greg Taylor, a young man. Maybe not as young as when Glenn started out in elective office, but he's getting there. And we'll hear from him after the break. And Yofu Elmore, thank you very, very much. Hopefully we'll see you at the homegoing here in Indianapolis this weekend, and, you know, a way for you to reconnect with a lot of people here in Indianapolis. We'll continue.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Councilman Monroe Gray, thank you as well. 239-1310, 239-1310. Afternoon's name is tomorrow. Black Catholics will be here. They're having a conference. It'll be next week during Indiana Black Expo time. time. African-American Catholics from all over the country will be here. We'll tell you all about that. Also, yes, we'll have coverage tomorrow of what Mitt Romney said at the NAACP. They applauded him nice. They gave him a couple good applause on some things. Then he talked about Obamacare, and they nearly wanted to boo him out of the place. We'll have Brother Romney's speech. You can hear it for yourself. Make up your own mind. On Monday, Vi Simpson, the Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor, will be here with us live taking your phone calls. Oh, and tomorrow, 7 o'clock, Light of the World Church, Indiana Black Expo's 42nd Summer Celebration kicks off with the ecumenical service. So you need to be there. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.